Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, January 22nd. I'm Ray Graff. Well, here we go. The snow is coming, couple feet of snow, 0 degrees or below this weekend. Perfect time. It's gardening today. We welcome Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Isla Riggs of the Berry Patch. What could we possibly talk about gardening-wise when all this bad weather's coming? Well, I really don't know. Let's find out. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. Gardening is usually pretty popular on the show. Not sure about January. We'll give it a shot. You can also email voxpop@wamc.org. Gardening after the news. Well, hello again, everybody. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. You're never going to believe it, but the gardeners are back in Studio A and ready to take your calls. Bob Graves is co-owner of Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward is from Ward's Nursery, a gardening destination in Great Barrington, Mass. And Dale Isla Riggs is from the Berry Patch, a first-generation diversified farm in Steventown, New York. You got a question? Have at it. 800-348-2551. 1-800-348-2551. You can also email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Had a couple of those already. Once again, the number is 800-348-2551. Hello, gardeners.
Hello.
Boy, I can't believe it. Whose idea? This must have been Greg's idea to do a January show.
No, that was last year.
That was last year. Whose idea was it this year?
That was yours.
It was technically yours.
Somebody slap me. The weather is going to be terrible coming up.
We need to talk about that.
It's definitely looking like a cold one coming our way. Coldest of the year, and a lot of snow, too.
If we don't get calls on it today, we should, because people are going to wonder whether they should knock all this heavy snow off of their shrubs and trees.
Well, let me ask you, Bob, should we knock all this heavy snow off of our shrubs and trees?
Well, the answer is basically no, right, guys?
That's correct.
If you got heavy snow on something and it bends down, you're going to do more damage by trying to knock it off than you would be by just leaving it alone. It doesn't hurt plants. They like to be covered in snow. What's going to hurt us is if we get cold and warm and cold and warm, which it doesn't look like we're going to get. It's just going to be cold.
It's going to just be cold. Yeah, the fluctuating temperatures are really what messes plants
up. Fluctuating is what
up.
Does it. And that's usually February, March the worst of it.
But so far, it's actually been like a pretty solid dormant season, I'd say.
The ground isn't frozen that far down yet.
We've been doing construction.
And
we've had really steady snow cover except for the 7-8 days the week before this one. And that's really just kept everything nice and cold. And that's exactly what we want. We don't want any changes.
Snow is a great insulator.
Yeah.
Plants always do better when we've got snow cover than when it's an open winter.
We find that people can grow things in the Adirondacks that sometimes in the middle of the Capital District we can't because they have consistent snow cover, and we don't.
That's right. You got way more fluctuating temperatures, so warm and cold. But again, solid cold, they're sleeping.
It's not always what you think.
Snow insulates, and a lot of times it's definitely better.
One of the things about the snow that's coming, it's not really an issue, for when it comes or even for a week from now. But since we're not going to do another show till the middle of February, I mentioned if the snow stays, which we all hope it does, of course, and settles down, you can sometimes get some rodents moving into the garden area, especially small trees are kind of susceptible, or small shrubs. So when the snow sort of sits around for a long time in and around that plant, the rodents say, oh, hey, there's some bark in there that's going to be really tasty, actually some cambium, and with this light
snow that we've had, I've watched the foxes in my backyard picking out the voles because they can hear them.
Wow.
And they go through just a little bit of snow. When they get this heavier snow, it's going to be tough on the foxes.
Yeah. It is. Yeah. The other thing with the heavier snow, too, is that sometimes even like at the Arboretum, we always put the winter protection on the plants.
Right.
But if you get deep enough snow,
they can now tunnel above the winter protection.
And I've had that happen in the past.
I had some big blueberries one year, and we got the kind of snow where it melted and got crusty, and the rabbits got on top of it.
Yes.
By the end of the winter, my blueberries were gone.
Yep.
They ate them right to the ground.
Yep.
So, not trying to make anyone too nervous, but really what in a few weeks, if the snow is still around, or even in a couple weeks, just walking out to those areas and compacting the snow a little bit around those plants or that new, you know, 1-inch, 1.5-inch tree or even 2-inch tree that you might have had planted in the last few years, so that when those voles are moving along, they run into that more compacted area and they go, that's too hard for me. I'm going to turn around and go somewhere else.
Because we're going to see the deer eating things that they don't normally eat.
Yeah.
We've been seeing
that. I've seen a lot of that already.
That's been a trend over the last few years.
And it's not too late to be wrapping with some.
Not too late.
Some of the heavier deer netting works well. That material called burlap works really well. And you wrap the plants tightly at this point, and that will keep the deer from feeding.
Yep. And double checking some of those plants that you did winter protection on. Before we get more snow is always a good idea, too. I've noticed that around the arboretum with some of the recent snows, some of those winter protection things have sort of knocked down.
Today's the day when you can go out and spray repellents.
For
deer. Oh, what a great idea.
You
get the deer at bay. Yeah. When the rabbits, too. All right, here's you know what? The first email of the year for the gardening show contains, an apology from Mariana in Lackawaxen, Pennsylvania, for what she's about to try to make me say. Hi, folks. I have seed of Acer japonicum aconitifolium. Sorry, sis Mariana. Well, too late. It was collected in Oregon in 2024. Instructions are to soak the seed in hot water, let it stand for 24 hours, followed by 120 days of warm stratification, 65 to 75 degrees, then 120 days of cold stratification, then plant. I have grown other Japanese maple species, and they just required cold stratification. Since in nature, the temperature length of time for the warm stratification would not likely happen, do you know the reason for this step? Is it to break down the seed coat more easily? Just trying to expand my knowledge of growing woody species from seed. I think there's another motive, and that was to try to get me to say something really impossible. All right, what do you think, folks? So this is a species of Japanese maple.
Yep. Yeah, yeah, and it's very, very pretty tree. Very, you know, there's a sort of a soft, almost chartreuse green, and there are some selections that are actually closer to yellow. Compact tree, big palmate leaves. The warm stratification then. Preceding the cold stratification seems unusual, very unusual.
That does.
Not impossible. Some seeds take a year or 2 years to actually get through the cycle before they germinate. But so I would just double check that because usually it would be cold stratification and then usually some kind of warm treatment, cold stratification, and then plant them, and they usually would be up within, 30, 40, 50 days after planting, which would be spring, would be perfect. So I would just double check
that. I'd run that by AI and double check that.
Yeah, I wonder if it has something to do with it coming from Oregon.
Oregon, could be.
Because there's a lot of Japanese maples in Oregon, and they have a much milder climate and a hot summer. So it may be something that if it's a species that was developed in Oregon, it may need that warmer stratification.
Yeah, most of the Jap maples we get come from Oregon.
But it's an Asian plant.
That's true.
And it's a temperate plant.
That's true.
So in, and the Acanthifolium is simply a selection. So I would think that it would not need that warm run. That said, winterberry needs 2 years. It won't pop the first year.
Yep. And you should be able to match the criteria. So if you looked online and some reputable sources, if it's correct, you should theoretically be able to find that information more than once.
Okay. And I'm amazed, Bob, that you're just very confident in AI at this point.
Oh, we use it all the time.
Do you really?
Absolutely.
What do you
day.
Use it for over there at Fatigan's?
A lot of organizing of data.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. This is from Nick. Hey, Nick, it's a little long, man. These are long emails, so just I'll read this one, but the show will be over. This is from Nick, who says, Cardinal creeper vine is the most entertaining plant I've grown yet. It's like the more organized, graceful version of morning glories with deeply red flowers that look around. For partial shade that feels tropical is perfect. Every year, I'm increasingly astonished by how resilient plants are and how unique in a splendid way each type is. This year, I brought in all of the annuals before frost. There are snapdragons and sweet williams that are still actually growing, albeit barely. It is 60 to 72 degrees with no grow light or heat mat. The miraculous Coleolia just kicked the bucket. I have so many seeds now. I learned that zinnia seeds all end up the same color the second year. Is that true? And does it apply to snapdragons?
I would defer to my daughter Eva about those zinnia seeds, but because I'm pretty sure that should not happen. That you should be able to get multiple colors.
Yeah.
It really depends on which ones he's collecting.
That's what I would say.
How many he planted?
Too.
How many different selections he planted?
A lot of times when we see a wildflower planting, they revert to one type of plant after a year. So it seems like they all changed to one color, but it's usually just that all the other ones that you had in that seed mix weren't viable.
Right. There's always seems to be one variety or a couple of varieties that do better than everything
like
else.
Like Rutabecchia. You just get nothing but Rutabecchia after a couple
of
years.
That's right. I do know my mom for years, though, collected zinnia seeds and always saved her seeds and replanted them, and she had a whole mix of different colors.
That's so, one of the annuals that's really good to grow from seed too, zinnias.
Yeah, it works quick,
particularly
really well.
Very quick. Don't plant them too soon is the first thing to say.
Yep,
definitely wait till at least the middle of April before you even thought about it.
And then second question from Nick, will mums grow from seed without a greenhouse?
So most of the chrysanthemums that you see in August, September, are developed from cuttings. He's saved some seeds, so he could do the same thing he's going to do with the zinnias, is to germinate those seeds in the mid-spring. Getting back to the snapdragons and the sweet william, they're cold-tolerant plants, so if he can keep those things going, he will be able to put those right back out again. And keeping the house cool and
they're
bright
amazing. Sometimes
is
if it,
ideal.
Not maybe this year, but in past years, they've gone right through the winter outside, the snaps.
And that coleus, I think he overwatered it because they're really easy to keep inside because they're pretty low-light plants.
Low-light plants.
Okay. Just got to keep them on the dry side.
All right, final question from Nick, and then we'll take a break. The number here is 800-348-2551. Are geraniums in a family of their own? They're very odd.
Odd.
That's.
I don't know what odd means.
Well,
what's kind of fun about geraniums is, there's perennial. There are perennial plants.
Yes.
Roseanne is this very popular one. Maculatum is a nice native one that people are asking for. And that is, the genus is still geranium. But the geraniums that you get in a container, in a little 4-inch pot that bloom all summer, those annual geraniums, are pelargoniums.
Uh-huh. Well, he says, I have four in different directions. The one with north light, cold window, and no water is doing vastly better than the one in the warm kitchen with the south light.
Yeah, bright window. I would move them all to that south window, and I would keep them slightly dry.
But he said the north one's doing better with no light.
It's probably more dormant just because it's cooler.
It's possible.
It may not be doing anything other than surviving.
All right.
Which geraniums, people dry them out, hang them up by the roots in the basement, and they come back.
They do. It's amazing what you can do with
you
those
can
geraniums.
Really abuse geraniums.
We have a 10-year-old geranium that we move in and out.
Yeah.
We got it from my mom, and still
sometimes
have it going.
The only limit on those is they get so big after a while you can't move them out.
My bet is by March, the south window geranium will look better than the north window geranium.
Well, one thing's for sure, Nick will let us know.
Okay.
Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. It's gardening here before the storm, the winter storm. We'll talk about gardening with you. Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves, 800-348-2551, back in a flash. Say, folks, if you didn't hear me prattling on about it this morning, the lockbox is open and we're looking for your support here. Our fund drive begins on Monday the 2nd and we're filling the lockbox. Any amount is good. You want to make a pledge? We'd love to hear from you. WAMC.org, where you can make a secure online pledge. Check out the premiums. Check out all the free content. There is never a paywall here at WAMC. Your support has never been more important, and you can go WAMC.org. Now, back to the incongruous gardening show here before a massive winter blast on Vox Pop. We have Fred Breglia, Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Ward, at, no, Bob Graves and Greg Ward. There used to be a Bob Ward who was a commentator here years ago.
Is that right?
Yeah. That's why that happens.
And yeah, sure. You're not confused.
My senility as well. That's
yeah, I gotcha.
All right. Before we hit the phones, Fred writes in, and thanks for your support there, too, smart guy. Fred writes in, I picked a few milkweed pods this autumn and want to plant them inside to germinate. The pods are in my garage, which does not freeze but goes to the low to mid-40s. When and how should I proceed? That's question one.
Yeah, you know, we've been talking a little bit about seed germination and getting some soil together, getting some little containers together. Some I would use bagged potting soil to make sure that it's clean. It doesn't have any weed seeds in it. Doesn't have any fungal issues that might come along with soil from outside. And it's usually when you're germinating seeds, you're looking for that 68, 72, 74 degree temperature. So keeping it warm and I don't think you have to do it now. We've been, mentioning all of this, and it's a long ways off before you can be putting these things outside. So germinating these things in April, late March or April is probably what I would tend to recommend. We could use Bob's amazing mind to figure out when, whether or not they need to be stratified anyway. I doubt it, but, I think, Bob, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, you could look that up really. Whenever I'm doing anything, I'm looking up propagation of this particular plant, and it's a very simple question. It's not that difficult. The thing I would mention though is just don't start too early. Everybody wants to get a jump on it. And they plant it too early, and there's not enough light. You don't have enough sunlight in the window, no matter what you do. Wait until April, probably for most of these, and January, February. Except for some unusual things like begonias that take forever to. For the seed.
I guess we shouldn't have done the gardening show today.
Usually, huh? It's like 14 days, 21 days for some of these things, to germinate. So that's why we keep saying April. That way it's starting to look like something in May. You can be transplanting them by the 1st of June.
Yeah, but there is something to be said for this time of year in terms of seeds because, I mean, I know people, you want to start to see things growing again. And one thing you can do is if you wait till April to find out if the seeds have viability, you're sort of behind the eight ball a little bit. So I always say this time of year, if you're getting antsy, start testing seeds. Start
you're just sacrificing a few.
A few seeds, and you can put them in a paper towel, moisten it, put it in a paper in a plastic bag. Give it a little bit of time and check on it. Make sure there's viability, so that way if it's not going to sprout, you're not waiting to April to reorder seeds. And it's also a great time to think about what you want to plant and order seeds as well. And I always say get them from reputable companies because, you get what you pay for. A lot of times you get these cheap seeds. And, it might work, but, reputable seed companies put a lot of time into this. And the work that we've done in our gardens, anytime we buy good seeds, it's almost always worked well.
Okay.
But sometimes even those really good seeds, after a few seasons, start to lose viability. Okay. So check check those this time of year.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I was going to say, and a cold, windy weekend to me is the perfect time to curl up with a cup of hot chocolate and start looking through the seed catalog.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things that I always encourage people to do, you're going to see a zillion tomato varieties, a zillion varieties of everything. And what we've done over time is really focus on the ones that have disease resistance, because that's the biggest problem for home gardeners is when the diseases start to hit. So there's been a lot of resistance that has been bred into the different vegetable crops over the years, fruit crops as well.
Yeah.
And so really focus on ones that have disease resistance and shorter seasons, just because we don't have a super long season here for growing.
Especially this year. It looks like it's going to be a long winter.
Yeah. I was going to say was that if you do really have to germinate something, some of the simple herbs or a mesclun mix of lettuce seeds, or some arugula, these are all things that if you have a bright location and you can keep the tray warm, you can just, a couple inches of soil in a regular tray and you seed it. And these are things that'll be up in, 10 days, 14
Amazing.
Days, and then you can be eating them within 3 weeks.
Yep. And if you have a little bit of a grow light, you can do a real lot more. A little bottom heat, a little grow light. I mean, you could be producing, to buy spring greens.
This time of year, With light from a window, there isn't much.
There isn't.
It's cloudy
no.
most of the time. The days are short.
Yep.
You think you have a bright window? You don't.
No. No. But a grow light will, you know, change the game
change the
for you.
Thing. All right.
Change
yeah.
the game for
Fred
you.
Fred has a second question. We'll move along quickly with that, and then we'll hit the phones. 800-348-2551. Usually it's one question to a customer. But, it's January. It's kind of an odd time for a show, so we'll go with it. Question two from Fred. For 2 years, I planted Brussels sprouts inside during May and transplanted them outside after a few weeks when sufficiently large. Partial sun, enough for a great crop of sun-loving grape tomatoes, and good soil enriched with compost, fine-looking plants, but zero sprouts. I've covered them with plastic sheeting to possibly overwinter, like I do spinach with great success. Will they survive and produce sprouts in the spring? What am I doing wrong during the regular season? And that's from Fred.
Yeah, Brussels sprouts are hard. A lot of it can be variety. There's some that just don't make sprouts very well. So again, that's where trying a couple different varieties would be good. It sounds like a lot of people actually top their Brussels sprout plants starting about the middle of August to encourage them to start forming sprouts down below. That again is variety dependent. So my hunch is more sunshine.
Yeah, he said something about a lot of sun, but he didn't say full sun.
He said partial sun, but enough for some tomatoes. But Brussels
somebody
sprouts,
says partial sun with vegetables, you go, nope, not enough.
Yeah. You really want a lot of these require full sun.
Yeah.
And if they're substantial and you top them, you know, there are going to be little sprouts there. It's
right.
just they're not really harvestable unless they get large. So I like that topping idea. That works for me usually.
Yeah, the topping I think is key. And there's a lot of resources that you can look into from universities as far as the best time to do that.
Okay.
But I wouldn't do it past September 1.
All right.
Not around here.
Quick show of hands, who here likes to eat Brussels sprouts?
Oh, I like Brussels sprouts.
I never did until I grew my own.
I'm sorry, you're all wrong. Yeah,
and
let's go
I
to the
never
phones.
Did till the wife made them for me.
Yeah, the wife's got to make
and
a little garlic.
Boy,
I mean, you're
she,
the garlic
she
man.
She nailed it.
Really?
A combination of roasted ones in the oven,
olive
super
oil,
good.
Oh, yeah.
And
just
then
just
also,
cook them right up.
Oh, my goodness,
but
God.
They got to be fresh.
Got to
be
fresh.
But garden grown ones make the difference.
Yes.
So, yeah, but I.
Yeah, it's true of everything.
They
yeah.
make great projectiles. and frankly, if you find an old musket, they'll go right in there. You can shoot them.
Wow.
Dwight, who's on the road. Dwight, go ahead.
Hi. I've made some raised beds that are 24 inches high, and I filled it with nice compost soil. I laid down some chicken wire in the bottom of it, some leaves, some newspaper, filled it up with soil, hoping to prevent varmints from tunneling up. They still get in. Any ideas?
Well, chicken wire is too big for, it won't stop voles.
It's got to be hardware cloth.
Yeah, you got to make a tighter wire for voles, which are probably the things that are tunneling in.
And they can climb right up the walls of a
Yes,
a,
they can also come over the
bed.
Side.
Yeah,
right.
But
and
hardware cloth
also.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have any kind of protection from like chipmunks? Because they are pretty terrible.
Yeah, I put some fencing up around the top of it, thinking that that would protect it as well. But it's I still get they're still eating my tomatoes.
Something's getting in there.
And squirrels will eat tomatoes.
Birds.
They're eating the fruit or they're eating the plants.
Both.
Yeah. So if the plants are being eaten, that's probably deer.
Oh.
Yeah, especially at 24 inches high.
Go ahead, Dwight.
My raised beds, I thought I'd be smart and build them up higher, but the rascals are still getting in.
Those rascals.
Yeah.
Yeah, fencing, so probably, number one. Repellents work, but they have to be reapplied. There's a lot of different home remedies you can make, but fencing, ultimately is the cure-all our perspective.
I think if you can get something to make sure that the deer can't get close to them, that would really, that
I've,
would do
I've
it
seen
for
the
you.
Woodchucks climb up 4 or 5 feet high.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. See them climb right up a tree.
They climb trees. They
and
climb
raccoons. Trees.
Woodchucks you, climb trees.
You'd never believe it. I had to see it to believe it. Okay. So I've seen a woodchuck in an apple tree.
Yeah.
And I've looked it up since then. And yeah, they can. Someone took a picture of one. It was something like 50 foot up up a tree. And originally, when I first heard that, I'm like, maybe like an eagle or something grabbed it and dropped it.
No.
But no, it actually they can climb.
Dwight, you want to follow up very quickly?
They're all good ideas. I've got to get some really good fencing. Yep. I think that's the solution.
Yep.
But they still get their nose inside there somehow. So
yeah, if you're going to do a perimeter,
I've had a lot of success in the past, but the last couple of years they've eaten the early crop.
So if you can do a perimeter fence, and then the bottom of that fence be some kind of hardware cloth that you put into the ground a little bit, you know, 6 inches or so is plenty. So that any voles coming along or chipmunks coming along run into that, I bet things will start to look really good this year.
Yeah. All right. And if you're not sure what is eating it, I always say, you know, advocate of putting trail cams out.
Oh,
so if
yeah.
you're not sure what's eating it, inexpensive trail cam is going to tell you most likely what it is.
I've been expecting Cornell to come out with an article because there are more little furry creatures than there used to be.
Yeah.
There just are. Chipmunks and voles and squirrels and woodchucks. You know, people say we're moving in on their territory. I think they're moving in on ours.
They're moving back.
Yeah. probably less predators, too, to some degree.
I don't know. I got foxes and coyotes, and they're still all over the place.
Owls and hawk populations are going up.
Yeah, well, that's good.
Yeah. And voles is the primary food source of red-tailed hawks.
Right.
Yep.
Really?
Yep.
Yep. And for a perimeter fence, I mean, you don't necessarily have to use a solid link fence. You could do a perimeter electric fence with a solar charger.
Really, I saw a woodchuck hit that once. He flipped upside down, ran away, and never came back.
Wow. Right. Okay.
Yeah.
And woodchucks will go 50 feet up in a tree. You've seen this.
I have not personally seen it. I've seen a photo of a woodchuck up in a tree.
It's not often.
They wrote me a question.
How
do they get back down?
They parachute down. How do they get down again?
Eventually they're going to figure out a way to get back down because they can climb.
That's amazing.
I know.
They called the fire department.
I never would have believed it, but I did see them in apple trees at the Arboretum.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they do climb. And if you look it up, you can verify that it's, you know, more than one source will say woodchucks climb trees.
Like Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom all of a sudden. Joan is in Schenectady. Hello, Joan. You're on.
Hey, Joan.
Hello, my friends. And I will be your personal witness. I watched the woodchuck climb right over an older fence, good, you know, 6 foot fence, right up over into the mulberry tree, and just kept climbing.
Those.
And and then I'm like, it's gonna fall down. Nope, just finished doing what it wanted to do, came right back down the same trail, and very gracefully, unimaginable for such a, I don't know, they look like they shouldn't be graceful. But it was up in that tree.
Wow, isn't nature wonderful? Do you have a question, Joan?
Of course I do, yes. I think I'm going to challenge myself to doing a cold frame this early spring. I know how to do it. I've got good directions for how to build it. Can you remind me, when would I put, like a spinach, arugula, when would I put things like that? Is it a degree thing? I have to wait till the air temperature inside the frame is warm enough. What do you think?
Okay, gang, before you answer Joan's question, what's a cold frame?
It's a structure usually, often wooden with some kind of clear paneling that protects, you know, basically it's a mini greenhouse without heat.
Okay.
It looked like a wall with a window over the top.
It creates a microclimate of sorts that you can get a... And a lot of people use them to get a jump start on a season, but some people can actually use them to grow things throughout the year. Yeah. You can actually get away with, growing some cold crops.
When you could either start the seeds early or you could, you know, and then be putting them out, you know, a couple of weeks earlier than when it would normally be time to do that.
Okay.
What I would do, Joan, is monitor your soil temperatures. Just get a decent thermometer, and when those soil temperatures are routinely in the 40 to 45 degree range. That's when you can start planting your cool season crops like spinach and arugula and peas and lettuce and things like that.
Okay, and you mean plant the seeds at 40 degrees, right?
I would, or the peas, you could do the seeds. The other little greens, I would actually get some transplants started and put them in the ground right, when the soil temperatures are that level.
I mean, you could put seeds in, but they would just be, you know, 3 weeks later. So they would they would be earlier than doing it outside, but you know, you wouldn't have them until May, probably, crops ready till May.
But I could start seeds early inside and bring them outside sooner.
Right.
It's very satisfying.
Yeah, you could start them, you know, seeds of like arugula and spinach and things like that. Start 2 to 3 weeks before you think you want to plant them out. And in a small cold frame, I'm guessing that you'll start to get those soil temperatures probably around the middle of March, middle to late March, depending on the year. We used to start transplanting in our greenhouses, which are much bigger and therefore don't get as cold. But in the first to second week of February, I would have 40 to 45 degree soil temperatures in an unheated greenhouse. Oh.
All right, Joan.
I'll put my fingers in there. Forget about seeds.
Hey, listen, thanks for coming today and answering the phones during the lockbox sections today, Joan. And we'll see you in a couple weeks for the fun drive, right?
You'll see me on Monday.
Well, the weather's going to be terrible, so be careful if you come, all right? I'll be here.
I'll trust the bus driver.
All right, Joan, thanks a lot. We'll take a break, 800-348-2551. It's Gardening Today with Bob, Fred, Greg, and Dale Isla, and you can email voxpop@wamc.org as well. More calls and such coming up. Frank West and Thad Jones, and the song is Liz. I don't know who Liz was, but she was splendidly modal. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. Gardening Today in January. When's the last time we did a January? Have we ever done a January
last year.
Gardening?
We did last year.
Last year.
Well, I thought that was February.
No, we did it January. That was Greg's idea.
Oh, that was Greg's idea last year, and this year it's my idea.
This was yours.
Yeah. I thought the show last
for those,
year was
for those that are keeping track.
Quicker and...
Yeah, we
so,
had a lot of
so this
calls.
One's lousy, is what you're saying?
I don't know who to blame.
We promoted it ahead
it's
of time.
A year later, I don't know. It's okay, thanks for that, Greg. It's not helpful. 800-348-2551 is the number. Email is voxpop@wamc.org. And let's go back to the phones. Joe is in Canaan. Hello, Joe. What do you know?
How are you doing?
Good.
I've got a couple dozen black walnuts that are still in the husk. And I have an area next to a pasture. It's an open field, open sunlight. And my plan was to very simply take a pry bar and punch a hole down in the soil and just drop the walnut with the husk in there and let it do its thing. Do you think that's going to have any chance of success?
Yeah, well, where are you storing these walnuts?
I just got them in a plastic bag, and they're sitting in a garage.
Is the garage heated or unheated?
Unheated.
Unheated, yeah. So your idea more or less could work. With black walnuts, generally you want to husk them. You know, you can take the husks off. I recommend if you did that, you could actually dump some into water and kind of see which ones float. The floaters are generally not good. And then they're going to need like 3 or 4 months of cold. You know, like a refrigerator.
They're getting plenty of that.
So they're getting that. You need at least 3 months. 4 is okay too. And then otherwise, you're going to plant them like 3 inches deep. I think they should work well.
He could plant them now, though.
If you can get, you could theoretically put those in if you can get the ground workable. I mean,
I've got a field.
I don't have workable ground right now where I'm at. But
where I am, there was one walnut that grew. And I let it go, and it got huge, and it produces nuts, and there are now dozens of walnuts around that. They are all over the place.
Yep, and you know, a lot of times squirrels are the accidental planters.
Sure, absolutely.
Because they bury them, and then they forget where they put them.
But they grow so easy, I was amazed.
Yep. Yeah.
The squirrels are.
Several years ago, I had a bucket of them, and I just literally just threw them up into a an area where the with plenty of sunshine, and reasonably rich soil, and out of the the bucket that I threw out there, I I've got 8 or 10 trees.
Wow,
that's why I thought,
Really just grow.
Punch a hole in the ground and that's let Mother Nature do it the way it normally would.
Just plant them squirrel deep.
Yeah. Squirrel deep. Dale Lally, you were about to say
exactly.
something.
I was just going to say, that crowbar is, that's what the squirrels are doing, is they're digging a little hole and sticking them in. So that's great. I would put them in your refrigerator just to make sure you've got a constant cold temperature. I mean, you've got them in an unheated garage now, it sounds like. But just to make sure that they get enough hours of cold, I would just stick that bag of them in your fridge before you try planting them.
If they're 32 degrees, that's kind of what you're looking for with those.
Or stick them in your freezer.
Now, you said they have husks, and then you take them off to plant them.
Well, generally, I mean...
they're going to come off anyway.
They're
going to come off.
In nature, they will come
off. They'll fall off.
My question was, how do they do it in nature?
They're going to come off.
Yeah, when you collect them for harvesting, generally what you want to do is you clean them all up, and you get all the husks off.
Right.
And you can get them off pretty easily by just smashing them. You put them on the ground, dump them out, and just stomp them.
Right.
Step on them and move your feet around. And the husks, when they're ripe, come right off. And then I generally would just throw them all into a bucket of water, and anything that floats, I'd throw out. Now, I went through all this work at the Arboretum for a couple of years. And one year, I remember leaving the whole bucket out. They were all husked, and we got rid of all the floaters and had a bucket there. And I went in the next day to plant them. And or to put them in a cold stratification, I should say, and they were all gone.
No. Oh.
And now we saw them coming up because squirrels moved them.
Yeah.
So we saw them coming up in the gardens.
Oh, that's funny.
And we have them. It's like you say, coming up.
Yeah,
they're all over the place.
And
this past year was a good year for them too. We had a lot.
If the squirrels move them and bury them, and they don't eat them, why do they forget?
They forget. Yeah.
Really?
They're the I call them the accidental friends of forestry.
When you got nothing else to do sometimes, look up how squirrels find the nuts that they buried.
Yeah.
You'd be amazed.
You got to be real careful with the search terms there.
Yeah, okay.
Let's go to Richard in West Sand Lake. Richard, you're on.
Hi. I got a problem with cucumber beetles and vine borers. And I've tried everything to control them, and every year they get worse and worse. I picked them off in the morning. I've got the beneficial nematodes. I tried. I catch the vine borer moths when I see them, and I'm still infested. Is there anything else I can do? I'm an organic gardener.
Probably row cover, right?
Garden.
Either insect exclusion netting or row cover, so that you plant the plants, you get them covered right away, and it works great.
Because it's a flying insect,
I have the row cover. I do have the row cover, but they need to be pollinated. So it's a conundrum.
Yeah.
Well, there are parthenocarpic, which means they don't need to be pollinated. There are parthenocarpic varieties of both cucumbers and squash. So when you're looking through those seed catalogs this nice cold weekend, look for ones that are called parthenocarpic, and then you don't need that cross-pollination.
So is it...
Oh, great.
Is it... did you mention both cucumbers and squash, or is it primarily squash that's the problem?
I've got the cucumber beetle and the squash vine.
Right, but what's the plant that you're having trouble with?
All different kinds of cucumbers. I tried all different kinds. Burpless, the pickles. They just go after everything. Zucchini. They kind of let alone the winter squash, that's not too bad. But the zucchini gets infested.
Yeah, so there's parthenocarpic zucchini varieties available as well as parthenocarpic cucumber varieties available.
How do you spell that?
It's P-A-R-T-H-E-N-O.
Hang on, Richard. We're working on it.
C-A-R-P-I-C.
I'll find it.
That'll get you close.
AI will find that for you.
Yeah.
Richard, thank you very much for the call. Now, Dale Eiler, you said insect exclusion netting. What's the diameter on the openings on that? I mean, you need to have some air get in, right?
Yeah, so there's different sizes of mesh available. It can be anywhere from 1 by 1 millimeter down to 0.6 by 0.85 millimeter. So there's all different size meshes.
And do you use a variety at your at the Berry Patch?
We use two different sizes. One is 0.6 by 1.1 and the other is 1 by 1.5.
So you know exactly the insects you're hoping to exclude.
Right. And so far, I mean, the 0.6 by 1.1 excludes spotted winged Drosophila, which is this little tiny insect. And it's working for that. So if it works for that, it will work for most insects.
Anything that's going to work.
Row cover is a fabric-based thing that has, there is no opening really for
it's
that.
It's porous.
It just allows porous. Light and water to go through.
Yep.
And that's, I mean, it's the same idea, but it's not as sturdy.
It's not as sturdy. It also can allow more heat buildup.
Yeah.
So that can be a little bit of a problem
now,
at times.
I've read before that if you use row covers or exclusion netting, that especially for squash borer, you can remove that netting once the female flowers are up and ready, because by then you've pretty much eliminated the cycle of the squash borer.
Yeah, it kind of depends what time of year you're planting that squash. And people always have the option of doing successive plantings.
Right.
So, a lot of people think about, you plant your garden once and, whatever zucchini plant goes in May is the one that you've got. Well, commercial farmers are planting it in the middle of May, in the 1st of June, in the middle of June, in the 1st of July, and then when the plants get full of disease or the insects come after them, those just get ripped out and you've got the next ones coming along.
So it's almost every couple of weeks
every 2 weeks.
For some of us, two or three zucchini plants take up a lot of room. And so we don't have the room to do it a second time.
Right.
But one of the things I do, I'm sort of a lazy gardener in many ways. I probably shouldn't admit that on air, but I did.
You run a nursery. You want to say that?
It's like the cobbler's kids have no shoes,
Yeah.
At any rate, what I do is with the zucchini, because I do like zucchini and summer squash, is I go out there about, just as, you're starting to collect the fruit, it's working out, it's mid-July, and I have squash borers. They're in there. And I take my pocket knife and I slit the side at the base of the stem, right where it comes out of the soil, because you can see the frass, this little deposits of the plant that the squash borer kicked out.
And you don't have enough to do.
No. Slice it. It only takes a few minutes. You slice it longitudinally so you're not cutting the stem off of the root system, and you peel it open and you see this gorgeous grub.
I can't describe the look that Ray is giving you right now.
It really is.
It's just, you go, oh my God, if had 25 or 50 of these, it could make a meal. They're really juicy looking. And you pop them right out, and then you get extra soil from around your garden or wherever, and you bury that wounded area where all the frass was, and you're all set. They don't come back.
Are you okay? Is everything all right?
I thought I would pass that on.
Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves are here. It is gardening in the middle of January. Let's go back to the phones at 800-348-2551. Paul is in Slingerlands. Paul, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hello.
I have a. Oops. Can you hear me?
Sure. Go ahead.
I have a bay leaf bush that is about it's over 15 years old, and it's easily 4 foot high, and I can't even put my arms around it. It's so full and always does really beautiful for me. It's inside now. The thing is, my family has been wanting part of my bush, and I'm afraid to split it or divide it. I'm just not sure what to do or how to do it.
Okay.
It needs to be replanted.
So you can't split it. It's a woody plant. It's like splitting a maple tree. You can't do it.
Right.
Now you would probably want to take a cutting off of that.
You can take a cutting.
Yep.
And I believe you can take a hardwood cutting. So I think if you have the time and energy and some heat, you could take the cuttings right now.
Yep.
You just take 3 or 4 inches off of all the ends or any ends you want and get some rooting hormone at your local garden center or wherever, and you dip the end, the fresh cut of the end, into that rooting hormone, and then you stick it in some, you know, some well-drained potting soil, usually not too much compost, so it's well-drained, and you keep it warm and sunny, and it will probably take 40 days, and it will send out little roots.
Yep, you might have missed it a few times with like a spray bottle.
Yep.
Bottom heat would probably be beneficial, like a heat mat. And media, I would probably say it's going to be heavily based with perlite.
Like a seed starting mix would be nice because they're usually pretty well
drained. Even sand. We've used sand.
You could probably get away with that for sure, too. Mm-hmm. Yeah, sand's got a lot of aeration and a lot of good drainage.
What, about 72 to 80 degrees bottom heat?
Yeah, I would say. Yeah. Kind of room, a little above room temperature.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, there's a lot of stored energy in the plant parts this time of year. So,
and the great thing is if you fail the first time, because it's a nice big plant, you can just do it again in March or April, and you will be successful.
Do several at once.
Yeah. And then it's a genetic duplicate of your plant.
Yep.
So.
And would it
that's great.
Would it be helpful to put that tray inside a plastic bag to keep the humidity up around it?
I mean, that is sort of, you know, the trick with this winter is that it's dry and you have this plant with no roots. So that's why misting it would be good. Yes, creating a little greenhouse dome over it would be helpful.
You know,
as well.
Sometimes people say, well, does it help if I mist it every now and then? And the answer is basically no. When we were propagating stuff, we had a misting system on a timer and it came on multiple times an hour.
Right.
Yeah, that's the thing. If you're going to miss it, my dad had good luck with
but
it.
The plastic he did it by bag hand and patience, solve that problem.
Yeah. He was also retired when he was trying it. My
dad. Those trays you can get with the dome over the top of it. You know that would do it too.
Well, thank you for that call, Greg. You said something that I don't think I've ever heard on this show before. Rooting hormone. What is that?
Indole butyric acid. I think is what it is.
It's just something that encourages a plant to put out roots.
Yeah. Any plant.
Yeah,
pretty much.
They all require some different hormones to get certain ones to break. Like willows, for example, actually produce their own rooting hormone, so they produce a salicylic acid of sorts. And you can. That's why willows, you can dump in a bucket of water, and then like 2 weeks, 3 weeks later, there's roots coming out of them.
Amazing.
Because it does that. But a lot of plants, unlike willow, they don't have that ability, so they require some kind of an additional rooting hormone to encourage that root.
And if you get real fussy, there are different rooting hormones.
There are. We've done that with different ones. So certain ones are different part per millions. Yeah. And
the ones
so
you buy
so
in the
on.
Store that we have are kind of generic. They'll do most things.
Yeah, and some things are easier. Some things are harder. Some things you absolutely need it. Some things you can get away with a little bit less.
Hormone that stimulates root development.
Amazing.
And if you take some and you load the end of a cutting, then you're just really encouraging that cutting to create those little root nodules.
Yeah.
That's all that's happening.
And pardon me, but I've never done this, as you probably well know. When you do a cutting, you said you cut the tips.
You always want
of
the
branches?
Newest end of the plant when you're doing this, because that's the youngest part of the plant, and that's the most likely part of the plant that will be able to root. If you cut some older woody tissue, it's like being over the hill.
And can you do this with any plant at all?
Not everything.
Not everything. There are some things that are going to be harder, some things that are going to be easier. Some things like forsythia, you could take longer, like thicker cuttings off the main stems because they got a lot of raw,
a lot of
a
times
lot of energy.
Now,
you stick them right in the ground.
Instead of making cuttings, they do tissue culture. They're doing things with tissue culture.
What do you mean?
Yeah, so taking really microscopic amount, like small plant
cloning, basically
pieces, little tiny.
How
pieces.
Do you start a microscopic piece of a plant?
You have a lab.
Oh, you don't put it right in the ground.
No, we're talking about sterile or sterile
tissue
media.
Cultures. Usually, you're putting little. Bits of the plant in literally in a petri dish or something.
They have special trailers at propagation facilities.
They also have hormones in them.
Yeah, so many of the trees and so many of the plants that we get are actually done through tissue culture.
Yeah,
an incredible amount of.
But you can root a lot of. You can root a geranium. You can root coleus. You can root a lot of soft house plants are really easy to root.
Yeah, house plants are often very
easy. And the rooting hormone, is really helpful in getting that to the roots to stimulate, like. Fred said, a willow doesn't need it. It's making so much, you just stick it in the ground. It's fine. Same really with forsythia.
Yeah, forsythia is another one super easy when you just cut stems and stick them in the ground.
Dogwood stakes are a common way to do restoration, and you just
stick them in the ground.
Right
but some things can be a real you know, persnickety.
Well, we are done here, believe it or not. Bob Graves, how do people find Fatigan's Nursery?
We're on the Troy Schenectady Road, which is Route 7, 2.5 miles west of the Northway, near the road that goes to the airport, or fatigansnursery.com.
And you guys are doing some construction now, huh?
Oh, we're putting up a greenhouse. They're out there today.
Cool, man. Greg Ward, how do we find out more about Ward's?
Ward'sNursery.com is the website address, and we are in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, 600 South Main Street.
Dale Isla Riggs, well, the berry patch is closed, but and you're not going to be around for a while, but just go ahead and give us the website.
TheBerryPatch.net.
All right, and Fred Breglia, we know the Landis never sleeps.
It definitely doesn't. The plants may go to sleep, but they're going to be waking up soon, and even those ones are not completely sleeping. So, and we're also kicking off our 75th anniversary this year, too. Wow, so
cool. We'll talk more about that next month.
We'll talk more about that one. So landisarboretum.org, it's our website.
All right, all, thank you for coming, and I'm glad we beat the snow and did a gardening show. Support comes from the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang. Thanks again to Fred Breglia, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs for being here. Thanks to Zach Malloy, our engineer. Susie Checkeye screened the calls. Tomorrow on Food Friday, well, we just did the gardening show in late January, so let's keep the summer vibe alive. Tomorrow it'll be ice cream with Megan Kitsock and, oh boy, I'll tell you what, soft ice cream and -5 temperatures, what could go wrong? We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.